I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Brandon Gettert. He is the CEO and CISO. We're going to figure out what that acronym means at Curated Cyber. Brandon's mission is clear: make cybersecurity understandable and repeatable. I love that. Repeatable. Something very important for any business. Anything you do, it has to be repeatable. So I'm looking forward to learning about that. He assists clients in implementing the CIA triad. Boy, that sounds like some weird gang out of Hong Kong, but apparently it means confidentiality, integrity, and availability at the core of their operations. Starting with a comprehensive risk assessment, he can create policies, manage vendors, and design business continuity plans. He can also stress test these plans through roundtable exercises, identifying and addressing potential pain points. So I'm looking forward to this conversation. My thought is, for those that are listening, there are a lot of people that know cybersecurity is important, but take no action. So if you were to listen in anytime, I think today is the day to listen in and figure out what you're going to do. So with that, Brandon, welcome.
I'm so glad to be here, Craig. This is great. I'm excited.
So, we didn't talk about this, but you, I think we're both in Texas. You're up in Arlington?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's where my wife is from.
Oh.
Yeah, so make it up there frequently, and I'm down here in Austin. And, but the something you mentioned, and this is kind of interesting because I don't know if I would have associated this with your profession. You're a competitive foosball player.
So when I told you that earlier, I play competitively. I don't like compete on tour. There's a whole underground with this. So I'm not a ranked player in any way, but I do play competitive and I love it. I'm thinking about it right now in the back of my brain. Right now I'm thinking about what I'm going to practice on today to enhance that craft, to better that game. It's a discipline. Some people have golf. I have foosball.
Where do you go to play foosball?
So fortunately, the DFW area, we have a pretty big foosball community here.
Yeah.
And so it's there if you know where to go look for it. Bars. I play with friends. I have a group of friends. I play with a bunch of, really cautious when I say this, I play with a bunch of older gentlemen that they're really retired. So they have a lot, kids are grown. They have a lot of free time. But we get together on weekends and play. And I don't play every weekend. I got young kids, so.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And apparently you like to jam out while you're playing foosball.
So I like two things. Well, my wife, my kids, love them to the nth degree. But I love playing foosball, and I love 90s music, and I love listening to 90s music while I play foosball. So.
Who's your favorite 90s band?
Oh, loaded question. Oh, good question. I like Offspring, Oasis, Korn, Nine Inch Nails, Tool. Not really 90s, but they kind of fall into that category in some ways. Alice in Chains, Soundgarden.
It's an interesting variety. And we'll jump to cybersecurity here real quick. But
you're right.
The Offspring, it's really interesting. It's, highly successful punk band. And if you listen to their lyrics, it's lyrics that you almost want your kids to listen to.
Oh, so many thoughts around that. Give me one of the lyrics.
So how about "The Kids Aren't All Right"?
Okay. Yeah. You know what? I'm going to have my kids listen to some Offspring today.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. Probably I heard somebody explain it once. They said, you know, punk is countercultural, and the Offspring, their counterculture, you know, they put out songs like Get a Job and Self-Esteem, which is, you know, mocking the, you know, pointing out the fallacies of the hookup culture, and The Kids Aren't All Right, which talks about how a lot of promising lives are being destroyed, you know, by just poor choices.
And I got to admit, you went a lot deeper there with the Offspring lyrics than I ever have. And I love Offspring, but I've never digested it.
Yeah. Huh. Well, there's, you know, I know somebody recently who died of an overdose. And so it's almost daily. The Kids Aren't All Right have been playing through my mind, just thinking.
Oh, man, I hate hearing that. I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
So I was out with some clients and we were going to a ranch to shoot guns. And yeah. His wife, we were driving and we were chatting, and she's like, we were talking about music and 90s music and this conversation on repeat. She's like, when you listen to a lot of those 90s songs, that music is just so sad. There's so much sadness in all those songs. And I've listened to it my entire life. Like I really don't venture out into new music. I just listen to the same stuff on repeat. And I think I'm numb and desensitized to all the words now, because I don't even really know what's going on. And since she made that comment, I've really been listening to the words more. Now that you mentioned that about Offspring, I'm going to do the same thing. And I'm going to listen to those words a little bit more.
Yeah. I think you're in for a surprise. So let's start moving towards cybersecurity. And I think one of the most surprising things you told me was not about foosball, not about the 90s music. It's about your career that led to cyber. And I just can't connect the dots. What were you doing before you were doing cyber?
So I have a very interesting past. And so I'm going to give you the real long story, but I'm going to give you the short version. I'm going to give you the long road, but real short version. I was a cook at a bar. And I had like no direction. And I was like, this is great. I love this life. This was back in college. And the girl I was dating at the time, her ex-boyfriend was in technology. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to get into technology. So that started it. That was the whole reason I even got into technology. And so I went and started taking classes and I got a job in technology and did that for a long time. I was a Linux administrator for several years. I was a SQL, MySQL database administrator. That evolved into web development. That moved to software development. And then I had burnout. And then I got out of IT altogether. And this was post college. You build this career. I was 30 years old. And then I became a truck driver and I hauled livestock over the road. And I went with my dad. My dad was an over the road truck driver. So I hopped in with him. Got my CDL, then started going with my own truck. Got real big. It's a very unhealthy lifestyle. And so did that for about 3 years and then got out of that. And then I got a job at a bank. They needed a IT guy for some IT work. So I started doing contracting work and it was just a real random thing. So I started coming in, I cleaned up their Windows administration. So it's just a Windows, or I was a Windows administrator. That's what they brought me on for. And then it became project manager. And then it became really the unofficial perfect middle manager is what I was there the entire time. I was never the CTO. I was never anything like that at all. Did that for several years. And we had a exam come in because banks live under governance and regulation. And they brought in an IT or they recommended that we have an audit done, an IT audit on our controls. And so these auditors came in and I was enamored with that job. That was the job I wanted. And like from that day forward, I managed the auditors. I managed all that. And I still worked at this bank for several years after that. And then I got out of that career, out of the bank. And it was, if we take a little detour in how this career worked out, I wanted to go be that guy, those guys so bad. I want to be an IT auditor. And long story short, when I left the bank, which that's a whole other conversation in itself, merger, acquisition, one of those things where sometimes God makes things so uncomfortable that you're forced out in some ways. I was in that position. Like, I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to go anywhere. I didn't think I was good enough to go anywhere. Like, that was a whole thing. But man, the provisions that were put in place for me there, because I went to that auditing company that came in 7 years prior. Like, I want to come work with you guys. And they're like, great, we have a spot for you, but not on the audit side. It's on the virtual information security side. Are you interested? And I'm like, I'll take anything right now. I'm desperate. I got to do something else. And my now business partner, I met him there, and what he created, I perfected. And so we got a really smooth like operation now. And so, but just that's how I got to where I'm at now, is all those doors. Like, just the way things lined up. And to do the fractional information security work like we do, you have to know Linux, you have to know Windows, you have to know programming, you have to speak that language, and you have to know how to, soft skills, you got to know how to talk to the board. There's so many skills that were drafted up with every job that I ever had to get to here. Like, when you look back on that run, it's like, oh my gosh, this couldn't have aligned more perfectly for me. Like, thank you, Lord, for putting me in those positions, making me uncomfortable enough to force me to move when I didn't want to move, but had other plans. So that's how I got to here.
That's an amazing journey. And I didn't realize at the time that you'd started off in IT, got burned out, and then eventually came back to it.
And there's some wisdom there as well. I'm very hypersensitive to burnout because I'm not a real high capacity person. But when you run a business, you're running at high capacity. And when you have boys, two kids, young kids, you're running at high capacity. And it's a balancing act, figuring out, okay, I got to manage my resources. Because one of the things I'm really working on proactively right now is running a business is easy compared to turning work off, because I could work all day long. Turning work off and engaging with my boys. Like, that is something that I proactively work on.
How old are your boys?
Day. We're 3 and 5, but we're going to be 4 and 6 next month. So let's call it 4 and 6.
Wow.
I had kids a little later in life. I was 40 when I started having kids.
Yeah.
I was missing that piece all my whole life. So.
Well, And I think, you know, as we're talking about leadership, I think if you lead well in the office, but poorly at home, I don't think that makes you a good leader.
Oh, you couldn't have said it better. So I'm going to give my wife a big plug. I am the best version of myself I can be because of her. Yeah. And she has brought up we were coming back from a client site. So I take her with me a lot of times. Well, we have one in particular client. We get invited to Christmas parties, so we go to that. We were coming back, and this has become less now that we have young kids, but she was very intentional about having a conversation about, why don't you run the family the way you run your business? I was like, whoa, that is a really good, astute observation. She goes, yeah, because like strategic planning and road mapping. She goes, you do all that so well for your clients. Do that here. And so this year was actually the first year that we rolled that out. And so I thought about it for about 6 months. I was like, how do I do that for my family? And it takes work. It's a skill set, but there are certain roadmaps and milestones that I want my boys to be at. I want to pour into their hearts and encourage them and build courage and build strength and build all that. I want them to know those things. I have to roadmap that out. And so this year, I have 5 things on that roadmap where I want these boys to be here at the end of this year. And so I got to put that on the calendar, and I'm got to make that happen. And so I run my family the way I run a business. And I say that 'cause I've read a lot of business books, but we run a traction business. And so we have IDS, identify, discuss, and solve. And so my wife, we use that verbiage. It's not that I run my wife or my house like a business, but we speak that language because that's the language that we speak in business to, hey, we've identified something. Let's discuss that. Let's solve that. And the strategic planning. Like every year I have strategic planning and road mapping that we have with all my clients. It's okay, we need to get here. So with my boys, there's certain things I want them to know. Like swimming is one. We're struggling with swimming. So I got to proactively, we're going to start going swimming every week. So, but that's got to be on the calendar. It just won't happen, or I just won't do it. Cause by the time I get to Friday, I'm burned out. I'm tired. That's the last thing I want to do is go swimming. So,
yeah,
but I want them to know that there's several things that I'm working on with them. Swimming just happens to be the one at the top. I want them to know the Lord. I'm figuring out how to navigate those waters myself, with having conversations at the dinner table and engaging at the dinner table. Cause a lot of times at the end of the day, to write takes brain power. To have conversation takes brain power. To lead these clients to success takes brain power. By the time I get to that 5 o'clock and I'm checking out for the day, it's really hard to, okay, I got to shift gears over here. And now I got to engage in this. So it's working on it.
No, and I commend that. You know, my dad ran a business and he was always, always very busy. But the one sacred time of day was dinner time. And when we were having dinner, there were no phones answered. And, you know, this was before we even had answering machines. So if the phone rang and you didn't answer, there wasn't a machine to pick up.
Yeah.
And dinner usually lasted about an hour to an hour and a half. And he would lead us in discussions about all sorts of things, and just incredibly, incredibly valuable time. Something I look back at as probably one of his biggest successes in raising us. And so I just want to commend you for doing that with your boys.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. It's a work in progress. I fortunately had really good parents. Like my dad, that's one of the goals that I want for my boys. I want them to want to come home after they launch.
Yeah. Yeah. So the other thing, before we move on, talk a little bit more about cyber, you know, in the green room, I asked you if there was anything off limits and you said, I don't want to talk politics. And I was like, fair enough. We're not a political show anyway, but here's a strongly held belief I have. If you want to change the trajectory of America, you will do so far more effectively by investing in your kids, by being a father in the home, than anything you do in the ballot box.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the challenges that we're facing as a nation, if we could just go across the board and wave a wand and put dads in the homes of every boy, every girl in this country who's not only in the home, but actively involved raising their kids, a lot of the political discussions we're having would go away.
Could not agree more. I'm with you. Yeah. There's a absentee dads is a, it's a problem.
It's a problem. Yeah. Well, kudos to you for being part of the solution.
Every day. I work on it every day. It's every day.
So let's talk a little bit about cyber because, you know, it's interesting. It's something everybody's aware of, but my perception is it's something very few are actively doing anything about. Unless you're in a regulated industry and, you know, you have regulators coming in to see what your cybersecurity plan is, it's a threat to everybody. And people think it's an issue of large businesses. No, the biggest cyber, you know, the vast majority of cyber attacks hit small businesses.
Yeah.
And people do nothing. What do you think the cause of that is?
I think the cause is there's this misconception that it will never happen to me. Like, oh, that won't happen to me. They're not going for my little business. They're not looking for me. That's somebody else. So I think it all stems from that. The other one is, I think it's miscommunication. And it's miscommunication. A lot of, I got to dance delicately here. I don't want to call out any names, but a lot of times it's, well, that's the IT guy's problem. My IT guy's taking care of that. And once again, just miscommunication. Like I get brought in several times I'll get brought in and the IT guy and the CTO, chief technology officer, he's also the CISO, which is chief information security officer. Very different initiatives, very different directives. We mentioned at the beginning that confidentiality and integrity triad. If you have one, it's a triangle, confidentiality, integrity, and availability. And if you lean one way too much, the other two suffer. And the goal is, let's just meet in the middle. Like, that's a great spot to be. Like, I'm never going to guarantee that you're going to be 100% secure, but let's just do best practice and get basic cybersecurity hygiene in place. And this is my opinion only. You do basic hygiene, there's a 90% chance you're not going to get breached, only because the bad guys are looking for the easy. And they're going to, oh, they got MFA in place. Let's multi-factor authentication. Let's go to the next guy. Let's go to the next company. Oh, they've got intrusion detection in place. Let's just go to the next. Let's find that low-hanging fruit. It's really about the low-hanging fruit. So go ahead.
Do you consider social engineering a cybersecurity issue?
I consider social engineering awareness training. So I look at that as maybe not a cybersecurity. It's all packaged together. Like, it's called defense in depth. There isn't one thing that's going to protect you. It's multiple things, kind of like an onion. There's multiple layers to it. And social engineering has its place. I'm for it. Some people are not for it the way I am, but our employees are the weakest link.
Real quick, just for those that aren't familiar, what is social engineering?
Social engineering is when bad actors try to trick you into giving them information. So that's either through email, like, click on this link, or like, we get these text messages that come through. I just got one the other day that came that I was like, is this real? It was, your Amazon driver sent you a message, click on this link. So social engineering is just trying to get information. I was like, what? I think they're trying to get my Amazon credentials is what's happening here. That's what I assumed happened. I don't really know. I think anything that comes through text messages, the text message and SMS message, I look at that outside of communication. I'm not doing any business through that. So it's just the fraudulent attempt to get your private information, your credentials, so they can log in.
Yeah.
So,
well, and I've had things come through that look like they're authentically from Microsoft, you know,
and that works because 99% of America uses Microsoft for business. So it's a great campaign. It's a great campaign. The bad guys know what they're doing. It's a really good campaign because, like, oh, I got to log in. I got to put my Microsoft credentials in. So I have a talk. One of my talks that I talk about is, let's walk through it. Let's get on the dark web. Let's get on that magical place, which we're not going to go to in this talk, but let's get on the dark web. Let's go to a marketplace. Let's buy a list of email addresses. Let's look for a ransomware as a service campaign company. Let's figure out, okay, how easily can we draft up a campaign and make it look like it's an actual Microsoft email address? And then let's walk through deploying it. And then let's walk through what it looks like on our end. Like, that right there is a whole talk. And there's a lot of questions that come with a lot of that. And I know I just threw a lot out, but that's a really good training tool for everybody in the room, because they're like, oh, who are the adversaries that we fear? Is it nation state funded cybersecurity attack hackers? Or is it the high school kid that was at home sick? Not that I want to get in. Yeah, just home, not at school, watching YouTube videos all day on how to get on the dark web, how to get ransomware as a service, because that's a threat now, how to buy a list of email addresses, and then how to set up a little crypto exchange, and then how to deploy it, and just, we'll just see what hits. We'll just see what information we get.
So you've said this a couple times. What's ransomware as a service?
So ransomware as a service is basically the as a service solutions are, you hire somebody for their expertise. So basically, you're just going to hire somebody to be the ransomware deployment platform for you. So, hey, here's my list of email addresses that I want to send ransomware to. They will walk you through how to do that.
Yeah. I've heard that there are actual companies that have full development teams, and they're basically running an affiliate program. You get their ransomware deployed, you have a specific token, and when somebody pays out the ransomware, they get their cut of the ransomware and they give you your cut of it just for getting being able to pass that system.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Everybody wants a piece of that pie. And so, yeah, crime. I mean, it pays. And as long as people keep paying, whole other conversation on do you pay, do you not pay? That really gets into you, like your business. Like,
yeah.
Like here's the situation. Like if we get shut down today from ransomware, it's what do we do? Do we pay? Do we recover from backups? What's the process? And a lot of what we do is prepare and have those conversations. And like we mentioned, roundtable exercises. We'll come in, my company will come in, and we'll do a roundtable exercise where we're like, hey, let's just shake that tree. Let's see what falls out and see, we might not need to do anything. Like we accept that risk, but oh, you know what? There's some gaps over here. Let's put these controls in place to reduce that risk a little bit. And it's a really great exercise. We do that for business continuity and ransom or incident response. The two different things. Incident response is more data related. Business continuity is like keeping the business running from earthquake, tornado, tsunami.
So who do you typically work with? Do you work with smaller businesses, mid-size, or large?
Great question. I work with really a majority of our work is in the financial sector because we're regulated. It's no one's going to bring me in just to, oh, here's this extra expense to make us more secure. That just doesn't work that way. I'm only brought in after insurance has required you to have me, or you've had a breach, or you've been somewhere that's worked in financial and then you've pivoted out and now you're in software development or law firms. So majority of my work are financial institutions. I have a couple soft, we have a couple software companies, software development companies, a couple fintechs, and then law firms.
Yeah. You know, one thing I don't think a lot of people realize is, you know, when the internet was started, it was relatively insecure. They just, you know, didn't think to put a lot of these systems in. And, you know, I started learning Unix in 91. And, you know, this is when I was in university and, you know, everybody had a Unix terminal. And I remember them teaching, they gave us a guide of, hey, you can find out where one of your buddies is on campus just by using the finger command. And if they're, it'll tell you which lab they're in and all that. And I thought, well, that's pretty cool. And I had a brother-in-law. I went to school in Raleigh, North Carolina. I had a brother-in-law that was living and working in Houston, Texas. And I thought, well, let me try fingering him by his email. And I was able to go straight in to their system. And it was Wiltel, fairly large, you know, telecom. I was able to go straight into their system and see if he was at his desk. And I was like, well, this is pretty cool. And I would do that. And if he was there, I'd reach out to him. And one day, all of a sudden, I noticed access got blocked. And I asked him, I said, hey, what happened? He said, oh, you set off some security alarms. And so I was an unwitting hacker from the early days just because they didn't build it to be secure.
Why would they think? Yeah. You know what you did? You bettered their process. You made them a better company. You protected them from something bad. So good job. Way to be a proactive fighter in the cybersecurity cause.
So you typically work with people who are regulated. Their insurance requires that they be, they have a plan in place. What type of, so banks is one. What are some other examples?
Oh, banks, credit unions. They're really the two that are under like governance. You know, they got to keep their bank charter. So a lot of companies that I would work with is they're small community banks. They don't have the funding for a full-time CISO. They don't need a full-time CISO. They just need some framework, some repeatable stuff in place every year. And that's where it's a niche market that we fit. It's very good. And there's a lot of runway for this type of work too, because there's a lot more companies like banking has really been ahead of the curve of, like, you don't hear of banks getting ransomware. And yeah. Knock on wood, I don't want to throw that out there in the universe. Kind of wish I could take that back. But small community banks, credit unions, they've benefited from governance and regulation. And so they have to be at baseline. That's part of the deal. They have regulators coming in to make sure that they're protecting the bank's data, the bank's customers' data and all that. So they're not the ones getting hit real hard right now.
Yeah. Well, who do you see being the next big area where, you know, your services will start rolling out to?
So that I don't know. I have opinions, and fintech. I think all the new technology companies coming out, I think before they can sell their services to anybody, that they have to go through a third party. They have to have governance in place. They have to have an information security program in place. I think that'll be the next trend, because banks, for example, before we can even onboard a new third party vendor, we have to run them through a vendor management program and make sure, okay, do you have these controls in place to protect our data, to protect the bank's data? Because we're at this standard that a lot of great cowboy developers out there. I'm not discrediting that at all, but a lot of that is pushed to market and then security is bolted on afterwards. And I see that time and time again. Well, there's going to be a point where, sorry, we just can't onboard you. You just don't have the controls in place. Like, great software, we love what we're hearing. We just can't take that risk because you don't have this piece. And so I think that that's going to be the next piece, is this, the software shops.
Cool. So what about those that are listening that they're saying, hey, I'm not a bank, I'm not regulated, I'm not required to do any of this? What would your advice to them be?
Go look at CIS controls. Like what we do is public knowledge, what an information security officer does. And CIS is probably the simple, they have 20 controls that you can put in place. It's the CIS framework, computer, man, I don't want to butcher this, but I think it's computer information systems. But they have a list of 20 controls you can put in place. Implement those controls. That's what you can do. Follow that right there. That puts you at baseline.
Yeah. And kind of circling around, if you could do something, because this is a problem that I see basically, you know, through some of the clients that we've worked with who sell things like cyber liability insurance. Everybody knows it's a problem. Nobody thinks they're going to be hit. Nobody takes action. It doesn't become a priority until they get ransomed.
Yeah. Those purse strings open up after that.
Yeah. What would you tell these people that are like, I'm not a threat?
Here are the facts you've been informed. That's what I tell them is, okay, I mean, as long as you're prepared for it. Okay, do you have backups? Are your backups safe? Can you restore from backups? Like, how long can your business be down? It's leaning on a business continuity or an incident response exercise. One thing I like to do is I want to take the decision maker out of the room. That individual could be on a cruise and not available during this. What are we going to do? And if your business can go down for 4, 5, 6 days and then just recover a week later and customers are fine with that, you may not need that type of redundancy. So that's a business expense you don't need. And that's what we find. Back to that CIA triad, that availability piece is, and we really can be down for 4 or 5 days. It's like, okay, great. We don't need to focus on availability. Let's just focus on confidentiality and integrity. And so it's just figuring out what's best for the business. And that's really what it's about. Like, we're not going to come in. No, nobody should come in and be like, you need to do this, 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 this. And here's this expense, and here's this expense, and here's this expense. That's not how small businesses work. Like, it's not we're here to manage those dollars. And so I think that there's going to be a shift. Here's another prediction, and I could be way off base on this. So I hope nobody in the comments comes back and they yell at me later for you're wrong on this. Cyber insurance, getting covered to have, like, insurance companies are going broke. And yeah. So like they have really ratcheted up. You have to have all these controls in place. Well, they're making it to the point where, you know what? Maybe I'll self-insure. Maybe I'll just accept it that I'm not going to have cyber insurance, because the reality is you're not going to. There's been some cases where they're in the business of not paying, just standard insurance. Like, it's not our problem. This control, you said on your questionnaire when we gave you cyber insurance that you had these controls in place. Well, as it turns out, you did not. Now this policy is null and void. Well, what's the point of even having insurance if we're going to live that life? Let's not even pay the insurance policy. So those are the conversations I'm having now, is do we want to have insurance or not? But we can't. If we stretch the truth on the questionnaire, because they're not like sending someone from the insurance company down and validating what we're doing. We're filling out a questionnaire saying, yes, we have MFA. Yes, we have backups. Yes, we have network segmentation. Yes, we have all these controls in place. Users are not administrators on computers. All baseline stuff from those CIS controls I talked about. But if they have an event, they get ransomware, they find out that you didn't give us the truth on the questionnaire, this policy is no good. So one of the things I do every year for the clients that we handle, it's a real simple question. Here's what the listeners can walk away from here with this podcast is ask your insurance agent when you're renewing every year, is if I get ransomware, am I covered? And then yes, but, well, what's the but? I want to walk down that road. I want to know what I truly have. And then the other one is business email compromise. And that's where we're talking about aware phishing, is where one of my employees gave out their username and password and MFA code, and a bad guy got into their mailbox. Now we got to do forensics on the mailbox. We got to figure out what information was in the mailbox. Do we have retention on the mailbox? And if that event happens, am I covered? Because that's probably what I'm concerned about, is ransomware, business email compromise first, ransomware second. And it's even getting worse now, because now the bad actors, they're doing, it's not just ransomware. One, they're getting in, they're sitting dormant, and they're waiting. They're slowly extracting data. And then once they have the data, now it's double extortion, because they're like, hey, one, we're locking you down, and we have your data. So now you have to pay us to get the data back. And two, if you don't pay, we're going to go after the customers that are in this data that we find. We're going to figure out what the data is. We're going to go find them and tell them. And now you got reputational risk. So it gets real, real scary, real fast, real hairy, real fast. So there's a lot of conversations. And that's why it needs to be a boardroom initiative. And we need to bring in, like, that's in a whole other scope, is I need a champion on the board. I need somebody that is pro cybersecurity, because we need it. We need direction from the top. We need executives that, like, we can't build a cybersecurity program from the bottom and work our way up. There's too many roadblocks. But if we have that initiative from the top of, hey guys, we want to be at baseline. Those CIS controls, we want to meet those 20 controls. Let's do it. Here's the roadmap. Here's the plan.
Yeah. Well, I do hope people will take action. I've heard a story of a dry cleaner, not a chain of dry cleaners, just a single location that got ransomed. And if a single dry cleaner, which, you know, if you've ever been in one, you know, they have hundreds or thousands of garments, mm-hmm. then all of a sudden they can't find, because they can't find the location for the garment.
Yeah, it's such a disruption. My vet actually got shut down. There's a lot of vets that got shut down. My vet got shut down a while back. And it's chaos. What do you do? Like, what do you do? What do you do? Yeah. You know,
I think one thing they should do is call you. How do they, how do people reach you?
So our website's a great place, curatedcyber.com. You can follow us on LinkedIn. We're just now starting this whole, we're making videos, and we're like, one of the videos that I'm in the process of making here this week is I want to talk about sextortion. And what's happening is kids in high school It's usually dudes. It's usually the guys. They're getting hit up by these girls. And then all of a sudden, they're being talked into sending nudes. And I'm going to send you a nude. You send me a nude. Well, now all of a sudden, these bad guys are, okay, actually, I'm not a girl. I'm from a dirty call center. And I got your nudes now. And I'm going to send them to your whole family on Facebook if you don't send me, $200, $300, $400, $500. So, like, we're seeing those type of...
Yeah, no, it's scary. Scary. Yeah. It's an important issue. Well, Brandon, I really appreciate you bringing it here to Leaders and Legacies. I do hope people reach out to you. And once again, how do they reach you?
Our website, curatedcyber.com. You can find us on LinkedIn as well, Curated Cyber on LinkedIn. You can email us at vciso@curatedcyber.com. That goes to the information security officers at Curated Cyber. So this was great. Thank you for having me on. There was so much more I wanted to talk about. We could talk for hours. So,
fascinating stuff. Thank you. Brandon, thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.